Wish you could bring Radio DePaul with you everywhere you go? Well, now you can with the Radio DePaul mobile app. Download this easy-to-use, free app from the App Store or Google Play to listen live. With the portability of a phone and the simplicity of pushing buttons, Radio DePaul satisfies all your audio needs straight from your pocket. From the main station to sports, news, and podcasts, your entertainment options are endless. Download now and try not to break your phone in excitement.
This message brought to you by Radio DePaul, Chicago's college connection.
Good morning, Scrawl Nation. Today is Friday, November 2nd, and this is Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection. You're listening to Scrawl Radio, hurried but well-considered thoughts about peer writing tutoring and the writing process, brought to you by the University Center for Writing-Based Learning, a.k.a. the UQWubble. I'm your host, Riley O., joined by my hosts, Kristen, Gia, and Emily. And today we're talking about Dungeons & Dragons and the writing process.
Wow.
Amazing.
Thanks so much,
Great
Riley.
Intro, Riley. Yes.
Everyone give a symbolic round of applause to our, to our special guest host, Riley O., an all-star UQWubbler who won our little writing contest in Order of Teams Week and presented us with this awesome topic. So, Riley, why did you want to talk about Dungeons & Dragons on the air, on Scrawl?
Well, Dungeons & Dragons is like 30% of my life.
Yes.
If there's any opportunity to talk about it, I'll take it.
That's amazing.
Fair enough.
That's what we like to hear.
We love that. So how long have you been playing Dungeons & Dragons?
So I started in high school in about my sophomore year, so that'll be about 4 or 5 years at this point. And
I
I've been playing as a DM or a dungeon master, the one who knows all the rules and stuff, for about 4 years.
Wow, good for you. Do we want to just say, if you don't know what Dungeons and Dragons is,
right?
Dungeons and Dragons is a role-playing game that you can do with all your friends, and there's lots of dice, and you make up characters, and your dungeon master is like, this is what you're gonna do, and then you go on a little adventure as your character.
Your dungeon master kind of leads you on an adventure.
Yeah,
and your characters
super fun.
Yeah, your characters' type of tendencies, personalities, and abilities reveal themselves to you as you progress in the world of your designated dungeon master. It's a lot of fun. It's a great way to also get to know your friends.
Really popularized in the 80s, question mark? Yeah, the 80s.
Yeah.
It's making a comeback. I have a lot of friends who play. I myself play. So, you know, play Dungeons & Dragons because it's cool. So, Riley, we heard that you made incorporated Dungeons and Dragons into your tutoring philosophy, or you know, like why, like your little written piece about tutoring for the UQWubble. Do you want to tell us about that a little bit?
Absolutely, yeah. So I, as a person with who spends a lot of my time playing Dungeons and Dragons, I could really see a lot of connections between the work that I do in Dungeons and Dragons and the work that I bring into the Writing Center.
Oh, we love that.
There's a lot of correlation with the way that we collaborate and the way that the Dungeon Master really like sets up a lot of stuff for the players to feed into. The players really are kind of the stars, I would say, of a Dungeon and Dragons session. And I think of the Dungeon Master as like a facilitator. And that's really similar to our Writing Center work. When you come, when someone comes in for a face-to-face and we set up a space in which we can help them find the rules and find a structure in which they can really write about whatever they want, but using mm-hmm. conventions and using rules.
Yeah.
And that's really similar to Dungeons and Dragons.
That's so cool.
That's such a good example.
Helping you.
Yeah, that is a great one.
I like the idea of like helping the writers find the rules, because it's not like we're like, we have, us as writing tutors have all this like knowledge about writing that we're like bestowing upon these people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's
we're
just,
non-authoritative.
Yeah, we're non-authoritative. It's just these rules that exist that some people aren't as familiar with, which mm-hmm. is exactly what happened if you're like playing Dungeons and Dragons, don't really mm-hmm. know what you're doing. Kristen, yeah.
Yeah, right. I like also the idea that in a game of Dungeons and Dragons, you know, you as a character can propose kind of to the group and to the DM, you know, oh, I make this move, and the DM can go, can't do that. And it shows, like,
yeah, that happens to me a lot, actually.
Yeah, I think it, like, shows how, like, the players start out with, like, this creative agency, you know? You, like, get creative and just, like, try out different things within the game, and it's, like, super cool and fun, and it's, like, the same thing with writing, you know? We encourage writers to be creative and try new things, but at times, you know, we're like, oh, I can't do that.
That might break the world a little bit.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It might break the world. Yeah. Might, you know,
brings us
it might impact question. The clarity of your ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Type
yeah.
of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we love that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mentioned earlier that it's gained some popularity. A lot of our friends are doing it. A lot mm-hmm. of us are doing it. Let's just chat about the backstory, I guess, ooh. Of Dungeons and Dragons.
The history.
Can we do that?
Of it?
Yeah, like, why? I guess, why did it happen and why is it popular now? Emily, you got this?
So, I don't got all the answers, but, oh my gosh, English major, I don't have all the answers, but for me, I can definitely say that Dungeons and Dragons is something that I've always kind of, like, heard about, but never really been, like, oh yeah, that's a real thing. It's like been kind of a concept that I didn't really know anyone who actually played Dungeons and Dragons until Stranger Things came out.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah, and then like Stranger Things came out and I realized, like, I saw them playing the game and I was like, okay, that's what Dungeons and Dragons, like, I had no idea about the dice and the mm-hmm. things. So I saw them playing it and I thought that was a really interesting way to like introduce this game that's kind of an abstract concept to a lot of people and put it in this like piece of pop culture that would mm-hmm. be spread to everyone in the world. Yeah, Gia.
Yeah, I feel like when Dungeons and Dragons, prior to me seeing it in like a popularized thing and like it being really portrayed, I think, in like a positive light, because I think before that, every time I heard about Dungeons and Dragons or I saw it in, you know, media, it was portrayed as this like really complicated, I mean, it's complicated, but like, you know, like too complicated, like too difficult to understand. Like you have to be like such a geek. It was like a geek nerd thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Riley, do you want to speak on that?
Yeah, that's
I'm not calling you out.
No, I think that's absolutely accurate. And I think that's a big reason why Dungeons and Dragons is big nowadays. Because mm-hmm. about 4 years ago, they released the most recent edition of the game.
Yeah. Oh, wow. What edition is that?
It's fifth edition.
Oh.
And before that, there was fourth edition, but nobody really played that because it was kind of bad.
I don't know what edition I play. I think it's fifth, though.
If you play in the modern day, it's probably fifth. It's kind of exploded into like the biggest thing.
Cool.
Before that, there was like 3.5, and after that, Pathfinder, which is like an external company that came in and kind of revamped it, and people cool. kind of adopted it as like the new Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. But both of those editions incorporated a ton of like numbers. Like trying to do anything was a big numbers game. Mm. You would have like 7 different modifiers for any action that you would want to take, mm-hmm. and you would have some like detractors.
Oh no, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
My
yeah.
actual nightmare is when just numbers in a game.
Yeah. When I play right now, I do use Edition 5. And there are still, like, moderators where it's like, oh, well, my skill level for this, I always have really high charisma moderator.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Because I'm always like, I want to trick people.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm really into, like, getting people to do things for me in Dungeons & Dragons. But, you have to like incorporate like, oh, my skill level is this, and mm-hmm. then I also have like a different modifier mm-hmm. from it's like the charisma intelligence points or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine having 7 of those and sitting there and like you gotta have a calculator next to you or you just have to be smart, I guess.
yeah definitely. There are definitely modifiers in 5th edition, but they really like reduced them a lot and made it a lot more accessible, especially with the advantage disadvantage system, which you've probably had experience with, right?
Yeah. That definitely makes it a lot easier. And you just kind of know, like, okay, this is what I can do.
Yeah.
This is what I can't do.
For those of you who don't know, the advantage-disadvantage system is a lot simpler than having a ton of modifiers that you add up. Mm-hmm. It's literally just that you roll 2 dice, and if you have advantage, you pick the higher result, and if you have disadvantage, you pick the lower result.
Interesting. Yeah. That is much simpler. That's some math I can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The dice are crazy. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, there's so many dice.
There's so many dice. But
how many dice are there? Sorry.
In a usual set, I believe there's 7.
Seven.
Are they normal 6-sided dice?
No, they're all different. It ranges from like your regular 6-sided dice to like there's a, just like a 3 or like a 4-sided dice, like the pyramid. Then there's a, they all call it, it's D something.
Yeah.
Like D20 is the one that you use the most in, in my version. And because that's when you roll to see, like, oh, did I do it, like, good enough?
like, can I do a backflip?
Yeah, roll like, you'll be like, oh, I want to do a backflip. And if you get, like, a 2, it'll be like, you try to jump, but suddenly your feet are so heavy. yeah, and so D20s are crazy. They look wild. They're, like, all insides.
I've definitely seen pictures of them, and I get intimidated.
Yeah. Emily?
I think this all these things we're talking about to me show like the coolest part of Dungeons and Dragons, which is that it does pretty much the whole thing is just like creating this story and writing this story and like existing in the world of the story. And Riley actually brought up something really cool at our planning period to kind of tie the writing center to the Akubo in talking about like the interactions between the players and how those have the potential to like create a new story or change the direction. And that's kind of like in an Akubo appointment. Like every time you talk to someone at the Akubo, there's a potential for like a different thing to happen to your paper.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That's true. Like I always get a little, I think it's great when people, you know, have like multiple appointments and they're like, oh, like I'm going to like do my draft and then I'm going to revise. And then but sometimes when it's with different people, like you're seeing me in your second appointment, but you saw someone else in your first appointment. It's there's definitely like different feedback.
Yeah,
that we give, and they're kind of like, what? And I'm like, you could just think about this as like people with different perspectives seeing it and like they prioritize certain, everyone prioritizes a certain thing. For me, it's like flow of words. I'm like really like, oh, let's talk about sentence structure. I think it's super cool that like what I do in the game is absolutely affected by like all of the other players, what they're doing, if they believe in me enough. Yeah, super customizable, Riley.
Right, that's so important to like Dungeons and Dragons because you can't really like, you cannot play it on your own. That's
no, it's hard.
That's just like imagining. But
with just sitting and like, I'm playing Dungeons and Dragons.
I want to do a flip. And all right, there's a dragon. I'm going to fight it.
Yeah, you bet I am.
You're your own dungeon master.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, yeah. Kristen.
So how often do you encounter a dragon? What kind of dragons? I'm just intrigued.
Like,
I'm intrigued.
Oh, yeah.
They're like bosses.
Oh yeah.
Oh word.
It really depends on like who you're playing with and what your like DM decides.
Sure.
I love putting dragons in my game.
Okay.
I
love
it's
dragons.
So much fun. The last session that I played actually, the party was like in a dungeon in a mountain. And
amazing.
Way in like an underground lake at the back of the mountain dungeon. There was a black dragon who was sleek and swam through the water. But the players were encountering this dragon because they were running away from another dragon.
Oh, yeah. Are there any, like, good dragons? I don't know. Are there any dragons that just kind of come bearing gifts and there they don't attack you?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
In our dragon, Dungeons & Dragons D&D. I'm just going to say D&D from now on.
Oh, yeah.
In our D&D narrative, in my cohort, we have a character. It's Allie J from the Equable.
Allie J. Shout out Allie J.
She is. So there's a race you can be. Yeah, you have to choose a race, and she is a dragonborn.
That's right.
And she has this whole story of, like, she was, like, betrayed by her family or, like, abandoned by her family, and she's just like, she's, like, this chaotic good dragon just, like, out here, like, being, a badass. And one thing that happens is, like, these other... Ours, we have a whole, like, there are dragons... But they only belong to dragonborns, and they're thought to be extinct. But like then they're not, and Allie finds their family, but their family is like evil.
Oh wow!
Allie betrayed the cohort right before she left for a time. We like really needed her to help us like fight these dragons, and she was like, "No, I'm gonna join them," because they were like, "You can have a dragon if you join us." And Allie was like, "Peace out, guys." So
that's her kind. I mean, like she felt a fundamental connection with the dragons, and she's like, I belong with them.
I love that.
That's relatable.
But obviously that was like the end of a giant backstory. There's a lot that happens when you're like creating a story and being a DM. It's like very intricate and very complicated. Riley, do you want to speak on your experience a little bit
Sure.
about like planning your agenda of being like a DM?
Absolutely. So it's really a challenge of being a DM of like tying all the individual narratives of your characters into one sort of cohesive narrative. It's a real balance that has to be struck between writing like a plot that the players can like follow and giving them the freedom to pursue whatever they wish. And there's like two different like terms that kind of refer to the extremes of that. There's like putting your players into a sandbox, which like is the absolute freedom. You can create whatever you want. Or you can railroad your players, which is, you know, setting them on a path, not letting them do anything outside of that path.
Like, no, you're going to this cave.
I don't like that one.
You are going here. And you really have to avoid both extremes, I feel, because like players need that kind of agency and that kind of freedom to follow their choices and follow what they wish.
Making the story unique.
Well, while keeping it like a story, a narrative that's cool. And it's really tough to like tie those character backstories because they're all like super unique and individual characters. And trying to like combine them into a party, you can't just think of like what are the goals of the party, because it's made up of all of these individuals.
Kristen?
Yeah, I think it's really clear how that relates to like the way that we tutor, especially like specifically when we tutor like for grammar and conventions for like, you know, like we're in a college setting, mostly kids are or students are coming to us with things they have to turn in as assignments, right? So it's like so many writers have this cool, like unique, awesome style to their writing, and we have to kind of mediate the way that they like follow certain conventions that like are appropriate for academic style writing while making sure that like their really cool style, tone, and voice like comes through to make like a unique type of, you know, blending of their work that, you know, we kind of facilitate on the one end. It's something that's appropriate to the story, basically, the world that we are, like, facilitating, academia. The scariest.
The real dragon.
Yeah, the second then, Halloween episode.
Oh, yeah. What's really scary? Academia.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, so I think that that's a clear connection to, like, the way that Dungeons & Dragons operates and the way that we tutor writing. Emily, did you want to add something?
I actually wanted to propose that we take our first song break because it's about that time, and I just wanted to say, in our little research period for this, we all kind of got together and decided to find some songs that were kind of inspired by Dungeons and Dragons.
In
researching this, I found out a lot of like metal bands and rock bands actually used their Dungeons and Dragons campaigns as source material for their songs.
Awesome.
However, many of those are very inappropriate. So
Real.
We chose one of them that is not inappropriate, Through the Fire and Flames by Dragon Force. Please enjoy.
Off of the album Inhuman Rampage.
Also Guitar Hero.
Enjoy.
Enjoy. Welcome back. For those of you who are just joining us, you are listening to Scrawl Radio on DePaul Radio, Chicago's College Connection.
That was a rhyme.
Yeah, that was Through the Fire and the Flames by Dragon Force, inspired
Amazing.
By Dungeons & Dragons, which happens to be the topic of our discussion today. Before we jump back into it, I would like to give a shout out to two of my very good friends who are listening. Rand K. Rand K, we appreciate you. Also, Malcolm L., both of my two good friends who I feel positive would enjoy Dungeons & Dragons were they to experiment with this amazing role-playing game. Guys, let's get together. Right?
Thanks for joining us, guys. Thanks
for joining us.
Thanks for being friends of the radio.
Friends of the radio. We love them all.
Anyways.
Let's jump back in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Emily?
I was wondering if we could talk about this kind of idea that we mentioned a little bit in the first part, but kind of really talking about the different aspects of this idea that Dungeons and Dragons kind of facilitates both like individual creation of narrative, like an individual narrative that you make up yourself, along with that collaborative storytelling. Because that's the big, those two elements working together is really what kind of ties this whole thing, like with the work we do at the Aqua Bowl, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
But this whole idea that both of these conventions are working at the same time, I think is so important. Oh. Riley, do you want to give us some info?
Oh, absolutely.
Amazing.
So I talk about this a lot in my tutoring philosophy. And I think it's really applicable to the work that we do in the Writing Center. Because the way that like it works in Dungeons and Dragons, that you really like meld this individual narrative and this like group narrative, is like, I mean, you're a player, and when you create your character, and this is really emphasized in 5th edition, you really put a lot of work into generating your character's backstory and the whole narrative of your character. And however, that's not like what you explore when you play D&D, at least not isolated. Because you have this party of a bunch of other people who also have their own individual narratives and their own backstories. And they really don't, like, always meld. Because, of course, they're different people, different backstories.
Right.
And so your individual narrative will always, like, butt up against somebody else. Like take... What if, like, your character's, like, on a revenge quest, say? Ooh. Like, your parents have been, like, killed by a tyrant or something like that. And like your
That's
whole
Ellie's narrative. Ooh,
really?
She finds her parents. And
they're
like,
whoa.
No.
Wow.
Well, revenge over, I guess.
I want to do a revenge narrative.
Oh yeah.
Me
it's
too.
Super fun. But like say you're like just on this quest to like slay this tyrant. And you get this party of people who can help you do that. But what about if one of the people in that party is like a grizzled veteran who's like already been on a revenge quest, has already like seen what it does to like young youthful adventurers, and has seen the harm that it can do, like it doesn't bring satisfaction, then you have like the meshing of narrative, because that veteran is not just going to go along with this like revenge quest.
Of course.
They're going to like bring up the question, is this right? Is are you going to be happy with this? And that really begins the meshing of individual narrative and group narrative, because it becomes a question of like, okay, what is this party going to do?
Right.
How are they going to agree? How are they going to work out this fundamental conflict?
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
This like collaboration is what we kind of do in the Writing Center every day. Every time that we write, we bring in our own individual narrative, our own thoughts and opinions. But writing is like a fundamentally communicative thing. You're
always
conveying it to other people.
Yeah.
And so you need to be able to meld that individual narrative and all that backstory that you're bringing into your writing and get like figuring out how other people are going to take that, how they're going to interpret things and receive that communication. And additionally, as like Writing Center tutors, we can bring an extra narrative and a voice that can help those writers develop that perspective outside of their own and really generate something that really couldn't be done just on their own.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of like collaboration is one of like the greatest things that can be. It's why D&D is so fun,
That's
you know?
Sure.
That
True,
sounds
yeah.
so cool. And I love the idea that like you said, you give, when you're talking about these characters, like a lot of times they are like elves or like Gia said, a dragon, but you just said like they're a veteran, they do this. Like we give them these human traits that are familiar to us. Yeah. And I think that's really interesting. Do either of
They're
you
so
two
involved.
Do either of you two have any like really good characters that you've made that are things that like maybe bringing in stuff from real life and making some characters? Gia?
Yeah. So whenever I play Dungeons and Dragons, I'm not really into the whole like, oh, I'm gonna be like a like a gnome, and like my life has been gnome
stuff.
And I'm not good at like talking about like medieval background and like mythology.
Fair.
So I bring a lot of the real world into Dungeons and Dragons. That was a gross sound. Sorry. One thing I do particularly is I just take celebrities and that's my character. My first campaign ever, I was Mariah Carey, and that's the whole thing. I was just Mariah Carey. Mariah Carey, because you have to like do D&D stuff. So right. She was a bard, which just means she's a singer.
But she could do magic.
But
with her voice.
She could do magic, and she also was a tiefling race, which is like a demon kind of thing.
Yeah, they're like half devils.
Yeah, it's cute.
That's so Mariah Carey.
And you have to make like a backstory for your character, like a full backstory. Mm-hmm. And my backstory was that it's just Mariah Carey. And she's like not, you know, really in the spotlight anymore, which is true.
Mm-hmm. It is true to you.
Yeah, I think I put Ariana Grande into it because everyone's like Ariana's the new Mariah. Ooh. And all of that. Mm-hmm. And
did they fight?
No, I just, the whole thing was like Ariana has like made Mariah Carey like irrelevant. So the whole point of Mariah going on the quest is two parts. One, she has like never had a break in her life because she's been a tireless pop star. And so she's like going to go on like a little spree, a little bender, if you will.
Oh.
But but like a PG bender, you know,
right.
Like she's gonna go have fun. And part two is that she wants so desperately to become relevant again. So like every time we go into like a new place, she makes a ruckus. We're not good at being stealthy. Another character I had was the Linkin Park Mom of Hell.
We've all met her.
Yeah.
We've all met her.
Yeah, she doesn't have
her dog.
I said it. She doesn't have a set name in the game, so she just momish name you want to, like Rebecca,
Helen.
Cheryl. Yeah, Helen, Paula. Cheryl. Anytime someone like says something, like I just know it's me. But the whole point is that she is like the mistress of Satan, and she was like being Linkin Park Mom of Hell, and then she got dethroned. It's a lot of dethroning
that's fun.
In my
that is
characters.
Really cool.
That's and nice. She has to go back to hell and like defeat, but she can only get there by like consuming a number of souls. And wow. So like every time we have to fight someone, I like after we kill them, I gotta be like, oh, give me your soul.
gotta fill that quota.
Yeah. So there's always like a goal for each character. Mm-hmm. Each individual has their own goal that somehow is like relevant to the overall party's goal, or the goal that the dungeon master has
that's really
set
cool.
for you.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Because my dungeon dungeon master, his goal for us is to like go through like the seven layers of hell or whatever. And
nice.
That was his whole story. So I was like, okay, I'll jump with that. So Kristen, you want to add on that?
Yeah, I just think that like when you speak to the fact that you're not as into the lore and you want to just kind of make it more, you know, like, I don't know, relevant to you or like creative in like a sense that relates to your lived experiences with pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can kind of be related to, you know, writing in the sense that of like style mostly, you know, like traditional conventions. Like, again, I'm bringing up like tutoring for style and as far as like academic papers versus like a writer's really creative approach to a topic, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like there are writers who like want to know like what conventions they need to follow in order for their professor to recognize that like they tried hard on this paper in a way that's like uniform to whatever the rubric or what have you. And then there are writers who are really like trying to experiment, you know, and like make it relevant to like
definitely.
Their tone of voice and their style. And so it's just interesting to kind of get those two different writers, you know, the ones that come in and really want to know, you know, what's correct and what the traditional like lore-ish way of doing things is, if you will. And there are writers who are more just like looking to express themselves and like get general feedback from you. So I think mm-hmm. I kind of fall somewhere in between, in the sense that if I were to play Dungeons and Dragons, the lore seems really cool, obviously more difficult, but I also like kind of would be into like the creative side of it, kind of leaning towards more the way that I tend to write things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess you could say that it's a lot like one of our core beliefs.
Oh, say it.
At the Aqua Bowl. And it's that there is no universal style of writing.
There's no universal style
just
of
like
writing.
There's no universal style of making your Dungeons and Dragons backstory.
Oh, there's absolutely anything but a universal style.
Like there's parameters, obviously. Like mm-hmm. you have to pick a couple different things, but mm-hmm. you get to do what you want.
Yeah.
It's up to you.
Yeah. It's just a way of like mm-hmm. like putting numbers to whatever you want.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
So that you can like, interact with these
exactly.
other people.
When you say numbers, like, does the Dungeon Master like mediate theoretical statistics, like probability that something will happen? Is that what you mean by numbers in a sense?
In a sense, yeah.
To me, it seems like statistics is what's speaking as far as like, you know, maintaining a story.
Well, DMs,
like probability more than statistics, but you know what I mean, I think.
Yeah, yeah. DMs like do a lot of work in like setting like how likely is something to happen,
right,
and
okay.
then like rolling the dice to see
sure.
does it actually happen.
Okay.
And it's always like there's always a little bit of a numbers game going on.
Right.
Like, okay, how difficult really is this, and like
sure.
can your character actually perform this like action?
The numbers you roll on d20 mm-hmm. like if you're gonna do an action or you're gonna fight someone or you're gonna cast a spell
mm-hmm.
Depending on what you get, the Dungeon Master has to decide what happens.
Sure.
So like, okay, below a 10 they'll hit them but they'll only do one damage because
mm-hmm.
like they block mm-hmm. or above a 15 they're gonna do more damage because they'll like actually hit like, you know, like an important part mm-hmm. or
yeah.
something. Yeah,
or
so,
like if you roll a 20 you
yeah.
get a critical hit.
Yeah, exactly. So there's levels to this.
Sure.
But mm-hmm. just like when you do that, I just feel like that's so individually creative as well. Like, just like individuals are creating their own narratives, Dungeon Masters are also really unique in their own ways. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, I think, like each Dungeon Master has kind of like an aesthetic that he likes to follow.
Oh, yeah.
Because mine really likes anything with rats.
Yes.
He's always like, Rat King.
Oh. Yes.
He's like, now you have to fight the Rat King. There's always like some undead. It's always like a little spookier mm-hmm. than like medieval necessarily.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we always end in a we always start in a town and we always go to the brothel because that's where the secrets are.
Exactly.
Kristen, you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I just have like another question basically. This game is so cool. Riley, so basically like when you're kind of deciding the thresholds of the dice and mm-hmm. like the effectiveness of the action, is that something you keep to yourself or do you verbalize it to the group before or after? Or like what kind of insight to the effects of the dice does the group have while they're playing?
That's a good question.
Thanks.
It's always like dependent on context.
Sure.
You know, so like if it's usually like related to something in combat where they don't have time to like think about like,
oh, okay,
how hard is this gonna
be,
I'll keep it a secret.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'll like, well, I'll tell them like if they succeed or not, of course,
right.
but like they won't really know how likely they are to do it
mm-hmm.
until they actually try.
Sure.
And then other times like you have time to like consider the like potential for you to do something. And
sure.
I'll say like, yeah, this will be like a pretty difficult thing. It might have we call it a difficulty check, which
yeah,
is like
okay.
a threshold to meet in order to perform an action.
Sure.
I'll say like the difficulty check or DC is 15 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like moderately hard.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Out of 20.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can kind of like loosely relate that to the way we tutor again in the sense that like, you're talking about context, you know, and different like time constraints, so we kind of think about when a deadline for a writer's assignment is due and mm-hmm. like whether or not we keep certain, you know, aspects of their paper a secret mm-hmm. you know, in the sense where we just don't see it as important if the time
yeah.
constraint is short, you know what I mean, kind of the way where like if you're in battle, you know, you're not going to necessarily verbalize all of the small details going around where mm-hmm. it's like,
I love that example,
thanks mm-hmm. Emily.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's like kind of just thinking about time and whether or not something yeah. is relevant or even like needs to be verbalized. And if you have enough time, you know, mm-hmm. there's a way to parse out whether or not an action or like an experimentation that the writer is kind of, you know, going mm-hmm. for is is going to be doable.
Yeah, that's so real. That's definitely like a parallel between, right? Like, the like on the job thinking, mm-hmm, of like,
certainly,
is this possible?
Yeah. We're all DMs.
We're all really DMs in our own story.
Reach out to your local DM at the writing center.
Everyone should just get like really familiar with Dungeons and Dragons at the Writing Center. Yeah. We should have just like a center wide. Like,
yeah, no, honestly, that'd be super fun.
Matthew Pearson, put it together.
Seriously, Matthew.
Matthew, put it together. This is right up your alley.
But more so, our tutoring bios should just like be Dungeons and Dragons characters for like Teams Week or whatever. That'd be so crazy. Cool. Writers would be like,
Skrull
wait.
Should have like a collective, like, character.
Yeah, Skrull should be a character.
It's just like a collection of scribbles.
Yeah.
Because Skrull.
We're not going to parse her out on the air, but we will come up with a D&D character for Skrull as an entity.
Yeah, exactly. So I think now is a good time to kind of take our second song break. Emily, do you want to intro this one as well?
Sure. This song is In the Garage by Weezer, which is not necessarily written about Dungeons and Dragons, but has some pretty direct references to Dungeons and Dragons and kind of implies that Dungeons and Dragons is being played in the garage throughout this whole song. So please enjoy.
Enjoy it.
Yay, Weezer.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. I've got Kitty Frog. On the wall, my favorite rock group Kiss. I've got Ace Frehley. I've got Peter Criss waiting there for me. Yes, I do. I do. In the garage, I feel safe. No one cares about. Song
And we're back with Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection. If you're just joining us for the back end of our show, this is Scrawl Radio, hurried but well-considered thoughts about peer writing, tutoring, and the writing process.
Amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. So we've been talking about Dungeons & Dragons. Now we're kind of ready to wrap up the show. Yeah,
talking about what you're reading.
Talking about, you know, some closing thoughts on D&D and the writing process. So yeah, let's hop to it. Who's reading what?
Who's reading something?
I'm reading a couple of things.
Yes. What are you reading? What you reading, Riley?
Well, first off, I got a book from my like parents for like Christmas, like last Christmas, and I've finally gotten around to reading it.
Nice.
It's a collection of like short stories by Shirley Jackson.
Ooh.
It's called Let Me Tell You.
Oh,
and it is wild.
Really?
Every like short story is a lovely, it's like super interesting little like exploration of something.
Wow.
That always has like a really kind of unnerving twist at the end.
Sure.
That's M. Night Shyamalan.
It's really a little exciting. It's a fun little book.
Nice.
And then I'm also, I actually picked up The Hobbit again.
Okay.
Because how cool is that? I like read it as like a kid, actually, when I was like, I don't know, 10 or 11.
I have it at my house. I've never read it, though.
Oh, yeah? It's really good, honestly.
I'll pick it up.
Like, it's something that I've been kind of lacking in like most of the books that I've been reading. Being a philosophy major, it's a lot of like kind of difficult material to get through.
Right.
That's kind of just boring a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And picking up The Hobbit again, it's so enjoyable because like I don't want to put it down.
Yeah.
It's a little adventure.
I can relate to that in the way I pick up Harry Potter and also Steinbeck's shorter works. I will like be deep in like some material for class, and then when I'm like done with all that, I'm like, you know, I could like pick up a book off my reading list, or I could pick up Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, and I think I might do that. And that's kind of what happens normally a lot of the time over winter break. I read a lot of Harry Potter.
I'm still listening to that book on Audible.
Harry Potter?
No.
Okay, good.
A Little Life by Hana Yanagihara. It's devastating.
Ooh.
I just keep, like, every week I feel like I'm like, oh yeah, I'm still listening to this book, because PSA, it's about like 40 hours of content.
Ooh.
So we're going through it. But the whole thing is, it's just, every time I come back, I'm just like, worse things have happened in the book.
Oh,
and it's a rough read, but it's hauntingly beautiful, and I highly recommend, especially if you like queer literature. Emily, are you reading?
I am reading. Because I have so much reading for class, I haven't really been reading any like novels for fun. But I've been reading a lot more comic books lately. So the comic that I'm reading now is the Archie 1941 arc, which is a new arc of Archie comics with like modern day storylines, but set in the 1940s. So it's really pretty and vintage and cool.
Nice.
But I also wanted to say really quickly that I did a quick Google search on Shirley Jackson because she sounded so familiar. And I have read one story by her.
Ooh.
The Lottery.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the big one.
I wanted to do a PSA for everyone to read that story.
Is it? What's
what
it
is
like?
It about?
It's scary.
It is.
Okay.
It's disturbing.
Is it dystopian?
It,
like, you have to enter a lottery to like.
It's like saying something about like small.
It's saying something like, about small towns.
Small communities.
Ooh,
and like,
ooh, okay.
Like how those norms can like completely be imposed
on. It's about like social, like social ritual and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's
nice.
Really cool. But I was thinking, when you said Shirley Jackson, I was like, I know I've read something. But that is one of the most wild stories I have read. So
it's
a short story or is it a
it's a short story.
How short?
Short.
It's like it gotta be short.
Not long.
Okay.
Yeah,
not
it's
long.
Definitely like a 10-minute read.
Oh wow!
Like a 10-day coping with it.
Yeah,
I'm so into that.
Wow. I'm definitely gonna check it out now.
Me too.
Wow, we're really excited. It's just been such a good episode on D&D. Does
an
anyone
awesome
have
episode.
Any like final D&D thoughts? Oh, Emily?
Yes, I actually think I'm going to go play D&D.
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah.
I'm so happy for you.
This episode, has made me very
want to
try
my next meeting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into that.
I think that
well.
Would be really fun. Thank you guys for sharing your expertise.
Yeah. Kristen?
Just like another thought about role-playing games in general, you know, like D&D is great. It's like a kind of uniform way to play a role-playing game because it's super popular now and like a lot of people play it. But mm-hmm. role-playing games essentially are like, you know, a super free-form thing and like yeah. you can make up your own if you want. And
Kristen, you want to tell us about the role-playing game you made up?
Yeah, okay. I didn't make it up. My friend made up a really cool role-playing game and he ended up calling it Poor Man's Boot, and it was just like informal, super fluid type of thing, and we would play in his basement, right? But that's just like, you know, super related to
that's
writing
so cool.
and like the way that genre is bent all the time. Like people stay oh, yeah. bending genre, and just like you can kind of just come up with role-playing games. All it takes is like creativity mm-hmm. and like time, and that's kind of the way that writing works too. I mean, we were just talking about a super absurd short story that I'm sure is going to bend genre in one way or
oh,
another
yeah. oh,
and
yeah.
mm-hmm. so yeah, it's just like you get this freedom with role-playing games to come up with your own, and it's yeah. all about the agency in the end. Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I right?
That's
I
so
right?
much of like the heart.
Yeah. Shout out it. To Poor Man's Boot and our DM, Will. What a crazy guy. Crazy yeah. times. High school was a night. It was a yeah. good time.
Mm. Riley, mm-hmm. do you want to give us any closing thoughts?
Just play D&D, you know?
D&D.
I
Seriously.
Recommend it to absolutely everyone. And like, yeah. it really helps you like be a great person. I think, you know?
D&D like, makes a good person.
It, Seriously.
Like, you learn perspectives of other people and you empathize and all this creative good stuff.
Nice.
It's pretty sweet.
Amazing.
Pretty
sweet. Wow. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week on
Absolutely.
Skull.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Oh my God, of
nice
course.
Nice job, Riley.
Nice job, Riley. Thank you so much for being our guest host.
For those of you who don't know, Riley is on as part of an event that happened for Teams Week, and Teams Week at the Writing Center is something that happens every year that basically aims to get new tutors acquainted with the different teams at the Writing Center. So Skrull Radio decided that it would be a good idea to have a guest host as mm-hmm. part of Teams Week. So yeah. that's what is
honestly,
going on this week with Teams Week for Skrull.
Yeah, I like this though. If anyone has any suggestions about what they want to hear, what they want to talk about mm-hmm. anything like that, feel free to stop by the Uckable, or you can tweet us. Actually, we have a Twitter mm-hmm. at Skrull Radio.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
use your Twitter.
Use your Twitter.
What you wanna hear.
Yeah, we love our fans. Join us next week, same time, same place, 11 o'clock Friday mornings. Thank you for joining us this week on Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection. This is Skrull Radio signing out. Have a beautiful weekend, Skrull Nation.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.